are you today?
I'm doing great. Ready for a little camping trip?
Oh boy, that sounds nice. Okay. Yeah. Cool. How are you? I am doing great. I'm doing great. All good. All good at this end.
All right. Well, I'll take this opportunity to just welcome our listeners today to Flanagan's Eco Logic and our very special father-daughter duo, the Clean Energy Crash Course. And we have some exciting content to discuss today. I am reminded that I am my father's daughter with a passion that was brought to life. We're going to talk about the emissions time bomb.
Yeah.
Well, welcome, Dad.
Well, thanks. Great to hear your voice today. That's for sure.
It's
on a
great
Friday.
Yeah. Beautiful day.
And this is one of my very favorite topics, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, we just have to assume that not all of our listeners are familiar with the emissions time bomb.
Yeah.
So maybe you could start from the very beginning. What was the genesis? What are we even talking about?
Yeah.
And how did it all begin?
Yeah. Let me take a shot at explaining it, and then you can ask the questions that sort of clarify. But EcoMotion, my company, we were hired out in the Coachella Valley to do greenhouse gas inventories and climate action plans for, I think, 5 cities out there, 6 cities plus a tribe, the Coachella Band of Kaweah Indians. And we had a lot of money in the budget for community outreach. And I sort of didn't know what to do and what we could do to raise awareness about the enormity of the greenhouse gas problem. Some of those cities out there are very, very conservative. So I was really scratching my head trying to figure out what to do. But I saw a visual that came out of the United Kingdom, a company called Carbon Visuals. And it was just a graphic representation. But what it showed was it showed a classic, you know, one of London's classic double-decker buses. And then it showed behind it, it showed a sphere that was even taller than the bus. So imagine a bus and then a sphere, you know, raised probably 5 feet above the height of this double-decker bus. And that represented 1 metric ton of carbon dioxide. And I said, oh my God, that's just an incredible graphic. Well, how many tons of carbon dioxide, you know, does the average Californian emit? Well, it turns out it's 1 ton per month. So that huge sphere that, you know, larger than a double-decker bus, represents one person's, you know, greenhouse gas emissions for a month. So it's just this enormous amount of gases that we're all responsible for that are going into the environment. So what we did was we thought, let's build that display to scale, and let's call it the emissions time bomb, because Mike Aware and my staff and others, we had grown up with, you know, these time bombs that we all had, these ticking time bombs, these black time bombs. You wound them up and they tick, tick, ticked. And whoever got left holding the time bomb obviously lost the game. But we thought that what the Earth is experiencing is an emissions time bomb that is tick, tick, ticking away. And it's a huge problem. So we decided to make the big sphere that was behind that bus, we decided to make it black. We decided to put a fuse on the top of it. We decided to call it a bomb, very controversial, but we actually just went ahead and built the display.
It's pretty extraordinary, and it's pretty massive and hard to believe that Americans are emitting double digits of those every year, because the atmosphere is not unlimited. It's just a tiny little film around the biosphere. So can you talk about how our carbon dioxide emissions are compounding in the atmosphere and why it's a problem?
Well, I sure can. You know, at the time when we built the bomb, it was 2012, and mankind or humankind, you know, globally was emitting around 30 gigatons. So 30 tons times to the ninth, right? Or 30 billion gigatons per year. So just this enormous amount. And so that would be like 30 billion of the emissions time bombs that we're talking about. I just checked the data this morning. We're up to around 36 billion gigatons of greenhouse gases that are being, you know, pumped out into the environment. And what really intrigued me was that it turns out that as you go into space, and we are living in the troposphere, and then the next layer up is the stratosphere, and then the mesosphere, and then the thermosphere, and then the exosphere. But the troposphere is only 20 kilometers thick. That's 12 miles thick. And that's where all the greenhouse gas emissions get captured. And no wonder when you got 30 billion of these bombs going off into the atmosphere, no wonder that we're experiencing, you know, climate weirding. I tried to make that relevant with an NBA-sized basketball. And I did the math, and I realized that the troposphere is only like about two layers of latex paint thick on that NBA-sized basketball. So then again, if you just start thinking about all of those greenhouse gas emissions bubbling up in that very, very narrow bandwidth of life, again, you can see why our climate is just going absolutely berserk. We've never experienced this number of parts per million, or we haven't in a long, 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 long time.
And some of our listeners will be familiar with 350.org, started by Bill McKibben, and the term of parts per million. It's considered safe for our carbon levels to be around 350 parts per million. It's obviously an important molecule in the atmosphere. But currently there's some, what are we at, Dad? 417 or something?
I think you're right. I think it's around 420 right now. And so, yeah, 350 was considered that tipping point. If we went past that, we would start to see all sorts of weather, unusual weather patterns, you know, more fierce and more frequent floods and droughts and all of the things that we're seeing right now, that all of the climate scientists predicted that once we passed 350 or whatever the level, you know, whatever that tipping point was, that we are past it now, and we're seeing so much of this calamity. So, you know, all the way back to the emissions time bomb, the idea was just to, and that was, you know, 10 years ago, was just to work on the naysayers and to show that, you know, these emissions are enormous, you know, per capita emissions enormous. Imagine, you know, you have a house, and imagine you had 12 of the emissions time bombs, you know, sort of hovered over your house. That would be incredible. And then if you had a family of four, then that's all of a sudden that's 48. And that's just for 1 year. So that was the idea, was to create a display that would really sort of blow people's minds, but raise that awareness. And when you walk up to the emissions time bomb, and we encourage people to punch it and kick it and whatever they wanted to, it was made of a thick of enough vinyl that you could do that. But again, that troposphere, that narrow bandwidth of life that we all live within, would only be about 4 inches on the surface of the emissions time bomb, this huge, you know, 32-foot sphere.
Yeah, so needless to say, we're globally exceeding our budget and experiencing the consequences of that. And so part of the problem is because people maybe don't see the immediate impacts of climate change. It doesn't feel so real. And because carbon and other greenhouse gases are invisible, it's hard to see. So the time bomb serves a really important purpose in raising awareness. So bring us back to some of the details. We get the vision now, but how did this even come to be?
Yeah, just imagine this big, huge black thing, you know. Well, you know, I think you remember Jordan Garbio, who worked for me. He was he had the very unusual title of emissions time bomb manager. But, you know, his job was to try to figure it out. You know, how would we simulate that graphic, that image that we'd seen from London? And he immediately got us into the bounce house technology. Now, you see these, well, we all know what bounce houses are, but you also see these large displays on top of car dealerships and other retail furniture stores where they've got a massive panda bear or something up there. And those are inflatables. They're called inflatables, and they have a blower that electric blower that's just pumping air into them. They're kind of leaking gases over time or leaking air over time, but they keep pumping them up just like a bounce house does. And so we thought, let's consider that. And we found a group called Inflatables 2000, and they had never made an inflatable this large. and they'd never done anything quite like it. So they were intrigued by it. We actually had to scale it. We wanted it to be accurate. We wanted it to be 1 metric ton of CO2. And when we say that, you know, you'd say, well, what temperature? And we would say 20 degrees C Celsius. And we would say 1 atmosphere for the atmospheric pressure. It turns out we couldn't build to that spec. We actually had to use a slightly colder temperature, 0 degrees Celsius, to stay within their manufacturing or their fabrication limits. So we ended up with a sphere that is, you know, just shy of 32 feet in diameter. And then it's got this huge donut at the bottom that keeps it stable. And then it's got a large fuse coming out of the top. It cost about $7,500 to make this display. And then we were like, oh my God, now we have this thing. Now what do we do? So the first thing we wanted to do was to test an inflation. So we had everybody come over to my house in Glendale, where we've got a fairly sizable front lawn. And we started to, unfolded it or rolled it all out. And then we plugged it in and we started blowing it up. And it was like the blob, you know, this big, like a huge air mattress, a huge black air mattress that just started bubbling up like the blob. And then it got bigger and bigger, and then all of a sudden it was above our heads. And then all of a sudden it, you know, it literally went as high as the house itself, which is a two-story house with a pitched roof on top of that. Right off the bat, ABC News, the helicopter somehow caught wind of it and came over, and we made the evening news about some crazy guy in Glendale that's apparently just displaying, you know, the ravages of climate change or something like that. So that was the beginning. And we realized then that we really had one of the best visuals for climate change and greenhouse gases. Like you said earlier, all these gases are invisible. People can easily say, oh, they don't even exist. So putting it into a very kind of a shocking form, we thought was very useful. And it certainly got a lot of attention.
Yeah. Certainly went off with a bang.
It certainly did.
I'm getting an eye roll from Alex. So tell us about, you know, what happened next. I mean, how did you use the emissions time bomb to raise?
Well, it really went back to its really intended purpose was, you know, we had this contract in the Coachella Valley. We wanted to raise awareness about climate and climate issues, and we wanted all those city councils and the tribe, the Agua Caliente. I think I pronounced their name wrong before, but we wanted the cities and the tribe to all their councils all to adopt our greenhouse gas inventories, kind of uncontroversial, but then the climate action plans that were means to drive down emissions in these cities. So we used the we created a core of interns, Green for Life interns, we called them, and they were in these bright blue shirts. And wherever we set up the emissions time bomb, the display, we had all of the interns surrounding it, talking about it. And we had also developed with the interns, we developed something that we called the Save a Ton campaign. So instead of just being this shock and awe, like here's this ugly, ugly, ugly display that looks like a time bomb, you know, let's turn this into a campaign where we try to get people to save a ton. And saving a ton in this case would be like 1/12 of your annual emissions. And so we had notepads with all sorts of tips, you know, meatless Mondays will save this amount of, you know, these light bulbs will save this amount. We had all sorts of values calculated. We had pledges where people would sign up and say, yes, I will save a ton. And I work with my family to save a ton. We had little stress balls that we gave to everybody that were highly popular that were black and like little simulations of the emissions time bomb. So that was really exciting to have such a campaign wrapped around it. And I'm very proud to say that all of those greenhouse gas inventories, the first that were done in all those cities, Palm Springs, Palm Desert, Desert Hot Springs, Cathedral City, Blythe, and the Agua Caliente, they all were unanimously approved. And their climate action plans, which really called for significant investments when you really read the plan, those were all approved as well. So the display really fulfilled its mission. But then we had all sorts of interest across the country. How can we get the display? You know, this has shown up in the press. How can we get this display to come to our campus? And at one point, we decided to take an East Coast trip. And so we rented a van, and Sister Sky and I and Jordan, they literally crossed the country with the time bomb. We set it up in the snow in Boulder, Colorado, University of Colorado. And then we went out to Clark University. Just as we were coming into Boston, they were just capturing the Boston Marathon bombers. And here we were coming with a large display of a bomb. And so actually Harvard canceled our scheduled inflation there. We decided
too.
What'd you say?
BU, I think, also canceled. A couple of universities canceled.
And understandably, I mean, it was just the worst possible timing. We did tuck the fuse into the right into the bomb. That was sort of clever. You could sort of like tie it off like an umbilical cord. So it was no longer a bomb. It was, and we just started calling it the ton. But it really was incredible. We went to, I think, about a half dozen locations. We were on the quad at Brown University. We were at Clark University. We ended up on outside of the Sterling Library at Yale University. And there I thought, there's a guy, Anthony Lazarowitz or Tony Lazarowitz, who runs the Climate Communications Group. I thought, you know, all these Yaleys, they would just all get it. No big deal, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it was just incredible, the number of people that came up and talked to us about the display. And I would say half the people that walked by took pictures of it. This bomb must have been photographed, I don't know how many times, but many, many, many times. So we had all these different inflations that we did. We were at different events and schools and universities and farmers markets, all, you know, laying out, the ravages of climate change and why we all need to take action.
Conferences. I remember it inflated at ASHE at the LA Convention Center. Made the homepage of Brown University on Earth Day. I remember setting it up in terrible weather at Middlesex Community College.
Oh, that was cold. Yeah, it was not a fun thing to set up in the cold. And actually, it was equally difficult to deal with in the heat. We set it up in the desert a few times. And then once you leave it up for a few hours, this enormous black, vinyl object. So I had to have really good gloves for the entire crew to take the thing down because it got so hot. But it was, you mentioned the going into the LA Convention Center, and we had been given, I guess, by ASHE, we'd been given a booth there. And I think the typical booth was like 10 by 10. And I said, well, we need at least 50 by 50. And anyway, they granted us that, and they had alerted the Convention Center crew that one of the largest displays that they'd ever had was coming in. And so they, the crew had opened up these hangar doors at the back of the convention center. And of course our emissions time bomb folds up into, I mentioned the air mattress sort of, image there, but it folds up into something that's about 3 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet. You can go in the back of a little pickup truck. And we had it on a dolly, and of course we just wheeled it in through these enormous doors. But then, once you set it up, yeah, it's huge.
And so while we're reminiscing about the past, there was another fairly comical event that happened in Anaheim. Do you care to digress about that?
Well, I'm glad that we can call it comical and laugh about it. But yes, it was just an incredible thing. We had always joked in the office, what if someday, what if the emissions time bomb blows away, and flies away, and we had designed it with all sorts of water ballasts all around the bomb. We had all sorts of ballasts, and we had stakes that we could use if we were in turf somewhere. But I was back, I think I was having dinner with you or Sky back in Boston and some others, and I got a call from Michael Ware, who works for us, and he said, believe it or not, the time bomb flew away. And I, Right. I said, Michael, don't joke around. He said, no, I'm serious. You know, there's emergency crews here. Drew has been taken off to the hospital. There's a power outage, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, I didn't believe him. He's a very funny man. And I just thought he was pulling my chain. And it, how could that possibly be? But what ended up happening was as our team was setting up the bomb at in Anaheim at an elementary school site where they were going, or maybe, yeah, I think it was elementary school site where they're having a science fair. They were setting it up and it had reached inflation and there hadn't been any wind at all. And before it was all tied, properly tied down and ballasted, a wind came up and literally the bomb just flew like a beach ball at the beach. And this thing was huge. I mean, you know, 32 feet in diameter is very, very large. It's a very large ball. Three of my team members, Michael Jordan and Drew, were holding onto it. They were with tethers just to sort of keep it in position. And they were yanked badly. Literally three staff ended up in the emergency room that night with you know, burns on their hands, dislocated fingers. Thank God that Drew, who was lifted into the air and fell down about 10 feet onto his back, thank God he was okay. But it was a really, really scary thing. There were comical moments. There was a group of school children that, you know, the class, a couple classes, I guess, probably fourth grade classes, sitting out under a tree out in the field and in the shade before the science fair. And the bomb was coming directly for that tree. And I guess one of the teachers yelled to the kids, run for your life. The kids are scattering. It was just amazing. And then the bomb took out lots of branches in the upper part of the tree. Fortunately, no kids were hurt. And then it rolled over a four-lane highway. Fortunately, no car accidents occurred. And then it rolled over this lady's house. And she was a Frito-Lay's company night worker. And she was sleeping in her house. And she told us later, what the heck? She had no idea what had happened, but it rolled over her house, taking out all the antennae and the vents and everything. God. And then it went into her back alleyway and shorted out the power lines. So we literally had ambulances there, utility crews there, television crews there. And we learned we're an environmental consulting company. We learned a big lesson about physics. And what we learned about was the Bernoulli effect. And just as a beach ball takes off on a beach, same thing with planes. They get their lift by having different airwaves going over the top of the wing and the bottom of the wing at different velocities. And that's what creates lift. And that's what created this whole bomb getting away. So it was really scary. And I thought, I'm never going to use this display again. And then Robert Smith, who, you know, a fantastic engineer, one of my tennis buddies, said, I've got your solution for you. And I said, please, what's the solution? I was just going to load it up with ballast and everything. And he said, no, you just have to put a zipper from the very top of the sphere to the very bottom. And then you attach a string to the very top where the zipper is at the very top. It zips all the way up to the very top. And then you just tie that string on Earth or to a truck or wherever it is so that if the bomb takes off, the zipper just completely bifurcates the emissions time bomb. And then it immediately deflates. So that was the fix. But it was, it was an exciting adventure.
Yeah. Talk about trial and error. And, you know, thank God for insurance and that nobody was hurt.
Yeah.
And so the time bomb has had quite a life. And I know you had it for, 10 years or so?
Yeah, 10 years.
Go ahead. Yeah, we've just been, it was time for it to find a new home. And I forget, how were you contacted by the folks in London?
Well, we've had over the years, we've had interest in the emissions time bomb, literally from around the world. People have asked us for its specifications. They've asked if they can rent it or they can borrow it. And we've always said, geez, you know, we'll give you the specs easily. That's an easy thing to do. And we'll let you know, you know, how much we spent. We're very transparent with the whole thing. But we'd never obviously shipped it somewhere because it's so heavy. You know, not only have the actual bomb itself, but then you've got the blower, and then you've got all the ropes and the lines and all the ballast bags and the stakes. I mean, it really is it's quite an operation when you really get down and take a look at it. So, but I was at a certain point, I guess a couple of years ago, I just said, you know what, it really is time to have this thing move on. And so this fellow from the United Kingdom, Derek Coleman, nice guy, said to me, you know, is it possible to rent it? And I said, we don't really care about renting it, but if you want to buy it, we could work something out. He was leading a group called WACC, War Against Climate Change, in the United Kingdom, and a nonprofit, you know, environmental group, obviously concerned about climate change. And he just thought it would be perfect. So we made arrangements for him to ship it to the United Kingdom. And then after he'd used it a few times and checked it out, he could send us some money. Unfortunately, so he did all that. He did all the shipping. We had it all boxed up, and at gross cost, the emissions time bomb was loaded onto a freighter or I guess a train across the country, or maybe a truck across the country, truck train combination, and then onto a boat off to England. And at this point, Dara Coleman, I'm rather disappointed. He's not been able to get any permits to inflate the bomb over there, so he hasn't been able to use it. And so he's the contract is written that if he doesn't use it, he has to send it back. And so I'm very disappointed. I don't want it back. We had a good run with it. It's a fantastic display. I'd just like to have it. I like to see it get a new home. So. Certainly, one of the things that we want to leave our listeners with is anybody knows of an environmental group or organization, literally anywhere in the world, that would be interested in this emissions time bomb, we will give it to you. And actually, Dara Coleman and his group, WACC, in the United Kingdom, will ship it to you. It's available, I guess, long story short, and it would be a shame to landfill it, of course, but we are looking for a new home with somebody who's eager to really use it for the impact that we know it has.
Absolutely. So we need your help, listeners, to find a new home for our beloved time bomb. You know, it's just such an incredible demonstration. It's huge. And so it is great if it can be inflated and deflated so it can move around and have widespread impact. I guess the campaign of Save a Ton probably comes with the bomb itself, right?
Sure. All the materials and everything that we developed, we're happy to share.
So it's a big opportunity for anybody looking for a new way, who has a very large yard or a connection to a public space, who might want to use that opportunity to raise awareness in your community. So, Dad, do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
No, it was, well, I have lots of thoughts, but I just that it was great. It was just so great to take an idea or to have a problem. You know, how do we raise awareness? How do we get some of the naysayers, specifically in the Coachella Valley, to recognize the enormity of emissions just to begin with, even if they don't believe in the connection with emissions and climate weirding and climate change. But it really fulfilled that. And so it was a tremendously fulfilling project. And yes, it would be wonderful if somebody wants to take it and make it their own project.
Well, I commend you on your creativity and entrepreneurship and persistence, sticking with it and bringing the vision into reality. And hopefully that through this podcast or other efforts, we can help find the emissions time bomb a new home.
Yeah. I think I told you that when I told Terry that what I had bought, and she said, "What? You spent $8,000 on what?" But it was it's worth every penny. It's been worth every penny to be part of the awareness raising that I think now we still need to raise a lot of awareness, but now there's a lot of awareness out there. Now it's time for action. Thanks, Sierra.
Not sure who adopted who. All right. Thank you, Dad. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Let us know. You can also visit the EcoMotion homepage to find pictures of the time bomb in all its glory. And reach out to the EcoMotion team if you have an inquiry or any interest in helping us relocate the time bomb. All right, Dad.
All right.
Signing off. Great to chat.
Likewise. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye, everybody.
That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.